Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here. Happy Sunday to everyone. Hello, Zoom land. Oh, look at all of you. Today we're going to talk about today we're going to talk about something called the Dhatus. Dhatu is a Sanskrit word spelled D-H-A-T-U. I'm telling you that so that you can Google it later. If you're interested in knowing more about the 16 Dhatus, I promise to use that word as few times as is possible to use. And we're going to come at it from a little bit of a little more user-friendly angle than it is usually described, but it's an important teaching in Buddhist thought relating to sense contact with the outside world, the difference between the inside and the outside world. And so, we're calling this talk today, Everything is Touch. That's something you will hear sometimes in a Buddhist setting, in a Zen setting, that all of the senses are touch. They're contact. All of the senses are touch. They're all contact. And so here's how we're going to start. Some of you have in front of you a program. Some of you do not. But what is on that program is a photograph. I asked Kimberly, she's our admin, is it possible to put a photograph on the program instead of a quote? And she said, yes, in color, if you would like. And I was like, yes, I want color. Does anybody recognize the photograph? Oh, look at the hands. Look at the hands. You've all outed yourselves. Isn't that nice? So the photograph is a photo from the film First Contact, Star Trek First Contact. First Contact. And what we have in the photograph is our hero, one of our many heroes, Captain Jean-Luc Picard. And he is very, very tenderly and intentionally reaching out his hand. And he is touching something. And he is saying, I must have seen this ship hundreds of times in the Smithsonian, but I was never able to touch it. So we're going to leave the movie aside because this talk, sadly, unfortunately, is not about the movie. But what's happening here, for context, is he is able to touch a historically very significant object, the very first ship that will ever go faster than light. He's touching it. The memory that comes up for me is of taking a road trip with my family when I was 16 years old. And we went up through Canada and down through Michigan and all the way to the East Coast and down the East Coast and back up through Texas. And I think this took us 4 weeks, maybe. I was angry, miserable, resentful, bitter the entire time. Hated it. Except we spent 3 hours in the National Air and Space Museum in Washington, D.C. And I got to see the Bell X-1. Some of you know what the Bell X-1 is, some of you do not. The Bell X-1 is the very first aircraft to go faster than sound. So my father was an aeronautical engineer, so I grew up with planes and stories of planes and figuring out problems, how to get this thing to do this thing. Is it possible? And for a very, very long time, it was thought in the aeronautics world, it's literally impossible to create a plane that can go faster than sound. It can't be done. Something gets up to right before that magic number, and it disintegrates. The wings fall off, the thing disintegrates, and people died, and people died, and people died, and people died, and people died trying to get this thing to happen, until it did. They figured out a way to do it. which I will not bore you with, although it's a very cool story.
Bore us.
There's a lot of cool talks I'm not giving today. First is the Star Trek talk, and second is the 45 caliber bullet-shaped plane talk. Ugh, I'm giving a much less interesting talk than what could have happened. Nevertheless, when I saw this movie and Captain Picard gets to travel back in time, I had that same feeling of, I'm aware that I'm in the presence of a really powerful historical object, all the power is being given to it by me, it's just a bunch of metal, it's the shape of metal, right? But watching myself get so emotional in that museum as a 16-year-old, seeing this big orange plane that had done this miraculous thing, I remember thinking, I wish I could touch it. Isn't that funny? It's right there. I was as close to it as I am to that sconce. I wanted to touch it. You guys all understand this, right? You don't want to go on a pilgrimage to the Vatican to see the Shroud of Turin from across the room. You want to put it on. Of course you do. Of course you do, right? So all I'm starting off with is what I'm assuming is a universal impulse. I don't think this is unique to bitter 16-year-old me, and I certainly don't think it's unique to our fictional Captain Picard. I'm assuming that this is a universal impulse. I want to touch it. I'm not close enough. I want to touch it. All of you I trust have had that impulse, right? I want the kind of information that only this can provide me, right? All senses are touch. All senses are touch. Isn't that interesting? That's a truism in Buddhism. All senses are touch. Touch is touch, I know. But all senses are touch. Why? Because they're all contact. They're contact. So back to the dhatus for just a minute, and then I promise I will never bring them up ever again. The 16 dhatus, right? In Buddhism, there are 6 senses and not 5. We have the 5, one that we're used to, and then they also add mind, or thought consciousness onto that, right? Smell, taste, touch. What are the 5 senses? Smell.
Sound,
thank you. And then they add thought consciousness. So we have 6 senses in Buddhism, and each one of them has 3 components. There is, we'll use eyes. There's the organ of vision. There's the object. See the object? There he is. Boom. We have an organ, we have an object, and then we have consciousness that connects them. 3 things for vision: an organ, an object, and consciousness. 3 things for hearing, 3 things for tasting, 3 things for smell, 3 things for, do you get it? So if you actually think about this, and I encourage you to, you realize all 3 things have to be, they all 3 have to be present. The organ can be present, the object can be present, but without consciousness connecting them, let's say Busho's dead. The eyes are there, the object is there, but no consciousness to connect them. Or the consciousness is here and the eye is here, but no object. Or the object is here, but you get it, right? All 3 have to be present, right? For you to smell that croissant this morning, there had to be a nose, there had to be a croissant smell, and there had to be consciousness to connect them, smell, consciousness. So the 16 dhatus are the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, the 3 for each of those things. Is that making sense? Okay, cool. It actually does make sense, but it's just a really weird way of, when we first think about it, we're like, what are you guys talking about and why are those necessary? And then early scripture takes us all sorts of other places that are analytical and complicated that I don't get, right? I just want to touch the warp ship. I just want, that's as far as my dharma goes, right? But I do find it fascinating because when I take those 16 things and then I take the truism, all of it's touch, then I go, now it's starting to make sense to me as a Zen student. Because the Heart Sutra, which many of us know, some of us do not. It's our kind of central, most chanted, most memorized scripture in Zen Buddhism. It kind of says everything is relationship. It sort of says the very same thing. Everything is relationship. Everything is relationship. Zen offers us a vision of an interconnected universe without there even needing to be things that are interconnected. There's just connection. There's just touch. There's just relationship. That's really all that there is. It's a very, very dynamic vision. It's a very dynamic vision. Right? The Heart Sutra way post-dates the Datu model. Right? It comes way, way, way later. Because it kind of comes along and says, oh, and by the way, no eyes, no object, no consciousness. It takes away all of it. Right? It affirms it then again at the end, but it takes it all away. Isn't that interesting? All right. Some of us have heard, because it's just in popular culture, the koan, if a tree falls in the woods and there's no one there to hear it, does it make a sound? Do we know that one? Right. We probably know it from The Simpsons. Remember Bart had to wrestle with that one when he was learning mini golf. Come on, you guys. Are we doing Dharma or not? If a tree falls in the woods and there's no one there to hear it, does it make a sound? It kind of works with the cone, it kind of doesn't, because it's a yes or no question. It's like, come on, that's a trap, give me a break. Anyway, can you kind of feel one of the ways of playing with that, if you wish, is this idea that there's an object, but there's no organ or consciousness present to receive it. Do you get it? Oh, there's a Ruzan. But if Ruzan's there and Bhushu isn't there to see him, is there a Ruzan? Same thing, right? So we have a thing, but there's not a thing to receive it, and there's not the receiving consciousness. Oh, that's one of the ways of playing with that koan, is to kind of really play with weight. It's a fundamentally interactive universe. It's a fundamentally interactive universe. So we have a sense object, but without the sense organ or consciousness, there's no relationship. There's no touch. There's no relationship. There's no touch. I have no idea how old that koan is. I'm not even sure that's an official koan. I have never seen it in a record, but I don't know. I'm no koan expert. In my imagination, though, the English poet Thomas Gray in 1745 answered the koan. This is just how my brain works, you guys. A koan floats around in the back of your head. You read part of a poem and go, oh, he's answering that koan. That was polite of him. Right? Totally different culture. I'm sure he's never heard this in a million years. But in my brain, I'm going, oh, this is kind of nice. He wrote Elegy Written in a Country Churchyard. A lot of you probably had to read that when you were in school studying poetry. He wrote a very beautiful line. Full many a flower is born to blush unseen and waste its sweetness on the desert air. I'll read you that line again. Full many a flower is born to blush unseen and waste its sweetness on the desert air. Man, I can just feel that. What a line. All of us know this feeling. No one was there to see it. No one was there to recognize it. No one saw it. Remember that study they did like 15 years ago where they had Joshua Bell? You guys know Joshua Bell, like the most famous violin player in the world, like played in the subway for an hour? Just like change his clothes and put on a weird hat and whatever, they just had him play in the subway for an hour. Like. And they're like, later tonight, he's playing, right? At Carnegie Hall. Tickets are $500 a seat. You're getting it for free, and you're walking right by. Everybody walk right by. Right? I think he made like $8. I'm like, that's hilarious. There's the flower, right? Blushing unseen, wasting its sweetness on the desert air. Why do I think that's a response to that koan? I'm making this up. But I'm like, there's the sense object and there's no one there to see it. But the emotional punch of the line for me is the word waste. Waste. If a tree falls in the woods and no one to hear it, doesn't make a sound. That's a great question. That's also very clinical. It sounds very scientific. Waste. There's the punch. Because there's the emotional word. It was unappreciated. There wasn't an appreciative relationship. Can you feel we're still talking about relationship? But now it's appreciative. He doesn't say appreciate, but that's what's implied, right? If there was someone there to go, oh, look at the daffodils. Oh my God, it's so beautiful. Then that scent is unwasted. Isn't that the implication? That there was someone there to be in loving relationship. To the warp ship, to the Bell X1. There was someone there to be in loving relationship to the sound of the tree, to the sight of a friend. Isn't this interesting? You see how these things coalesce, kind of? At least they do in my head. This is how things coalesce. So here's what I'm offering to you today. All senses are touch, the 16 dhatus, there's your Buddhist teaching, Google it, knock yourself out, go for it. But what I'm offering you is the idea that if everything is touch, then what completes that relationship completes the relationship is appreciation. The nature of that which apprehends has to be appreciative. I'll unpack that word. But that's my premise today. And I hope for a lot of folks in this virtual room and in this physical room, you're already going, he's talking about Zazen. The person talking about Zazen, always, that's all anybody ever talks about when they're sitting up here, is Zazen, 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 Zazen. The folks across the hall there are being given instructions on how to sit Zazen. Right? Intro to Zen meditation is happening right now across the hall. And so what they're being invited to do is to explore their posture, to sit on a bench, to sit on a cushion, to sit in a chair in a certain way, right? To help facilitate them being aware and relaxed at the same time. That's what they're doing right over there, right? And most of us don't have the experience of being aware and relaxed at the same time. We're not very good at that. We're really good at being aware. Right? Come on, we're leaving Caribou Coffee. We are awake, baby. Right? Are you relaxed? No, I'm aware. Right? And we're all really good at that. We're also all really good at being relaxed. Right? But they're being given the invitation, I want you to do both. I want you to do both. Relax. Relax. Relax your face, relax your jaw. Relax your neck, relax your body, relax, relax. Soften, become a larger container. Relax, remember your spaciousness. It's okay, can you feel it? Relax. Oh, don't go to sleep. No. Don't miss anything. I want you to notice the arising of the breath. I want you to know how the temperature changes in the back of your throat. I want you to notice the top of the breath. There's a moment of tension there. I want you to notice the different temperature on the way out. I want you to notice whether it's in the diaphragm or it's in the lungs or it's both. I want you to notice how the exhale changes your posture ever so slightly because your balance just changed. I want you to notice, you guys know what I'm talking about. This is just meditation. Pay attention, pay attention, pay attention, pay attention, and relax. Okay. You're not going anywhere. You're safe. Nothing's going to happen. You don't need to worry about it. You don't have to try. But that's the instruction they're being given across the hall, right? And so they're being given the instruction to be present to your body. Be present to your breath. If they stick around long enough, at some point they'll be invited, bring your emotions into view. Please bring your emotions into view. Notice the feelings, how they arise, how they change shapes, how they include other things, how they pass through. Then they'll be invited, notice the impulses, notice the needs. Notice thought consciousness, notice the stories. Wow, there's a lot going on. In 5 seconds of human life, there's an incredible amount of information being right? Can you feel it? That's being received, that's being offered. And so what they're learning at some point is, I'm the observed, and I'm the observer, and I'm the consciousness. Do you feel it? Oh, I get it. I am all three of those things. And so then what happens, hopefully, is they start discovering the way that I pay attention matters. It really matters. Right? When I notice the busy mind and I judge it and shame it and scold it, the nature of the witnesser has a stick in her hand, does she not? That's the opposite of appreciation. That's the opposite of, oh, you're busy today. Aren't you busy today? I wonder how you're feeling. Storyteller, is there something going on down there? I'm curious. I want to touch you. Can you feel? I mean, even if you haven't seen the movie, look at the sweet picture. You can tell, can't you? I just want to touch you. I want to connect to you. I want to remember that I'm not separate from you. Everything is relationship. And so I want this relationship to be this. I want you to include me the way I include you. This is the Heart Sutra. Everything is touch, right? So there's a sense here that without that appreciation, something's lost. The flower bloomed and I missed it. The flower bloomed and I missed it. I'm sad about that. I know all of us who have done meditation have had some version of this experience. You sit long enough to start realizing, oh my God, it never stops. I don't mean to put words in all of your mouths, but you all thought, oh my God, it never stops, it never stops, it never stops, it never stops. You had a few moments of being present, and then one of the first things you realize is, I'm never present. Right? Everybody's had that, right? Holy macaroni! 24 hours went by in my life and I didn't experience any of it. Right? We've all had that experience. Even if you're not a meditator, you've put that last fork full of pasta in your mouth and go, I wonder how that tasted. Couldn't tell you. Couldn't tell you. How come? Because Bridgerton is happening, right? Or Star Trek First Contact is happening. I'm paying attention to that. I'm not paying attention to this. I missed my meal. I missed. Yeah, of course. This is the human experience. This is the human experience. So when we're sitting Zazen, and that busy mind shows up and I dismiss it. I do not want relationship with you. You do not belong here. Oh, I guess I decided not to love that flower. That's sort of sad, because the flower's me. The moment is me. The garden is me. The one who's walking through that garden is me. That's me. I just said no. I said no from a place of superiority and judgment. I dismissed my own experience. You don't matter. I don't like you. You're not good enough. Or you bug me, or you irritate me. All of us have received that message thousands of times in our lives, consciously or unconsciously, by strangers, by people we love. It's just the human experience. So Zazen then becomes this amazing container, this amazing possibility, this invitation we give ourselves as grown adults to sit down and start looking at that and go, oh, there's a lot of healing I have to do, and I can change my way of being in the world by starting by noticing the fundamental relationship, which is my relationship with my own humanity, my relationship with this very body, this feeling, this thought, this impulse, this breath. I'm going to touch everything, and I want all of it to be appreciative. There are no enemies here. I very, very, very much hope, and I deeply trust, that across the hall, they are not being told, some of your experiences are good, and some of them are bad. And so what we're here to do is filter those out. So what I need you to do is, right? Right? No. The unexamined life is not worth living, Socrates said. Can you imagine? Whew! That is strong medicine. Whew! That is strong medicine. We used to have a class here that we offered, I forget how often, quarterly or something. long time ago. I forget what it was, but it was like Introduction to Zen, and it was just open to the public, and we did it on like a Tuesday evening or something, and it was an hour and a half, and it was always taught by Tim. He was the only brown robe in town. Well, the only brown robe here at that time. And oh yeah, we just opened the doors, and you know, 20 people would come up, the understanding they've never been in the building, they know not one thing, and so he would just give a talk and do questions, and it was very informal, and it was groovy. Introduction to, I forget, do you remember, Bonnie, what we called that? Anyway, he always started with Socrates. Like, he started, like, we're here for Zen. He'd be like, okay, great, here's our starting point. The unexamined life is not worth living. Like, okay, so number one, that's not Zen. Right? But he's like, no, but it's Western. You all understand that, and you've all heard that a million times, and that's where we're starting with Zen. And this is why we examine, and this is why we sit, and this is why we come to know, and this is why we start to refine that relationship, and this is why it starts being more appreciative, and this is why it starts being wiser, and this is why it starts being kinder, and this is why it starts including more. And he's describing Zazen, and he would ease his way into talking about the spirit that we try to hold when we do meditation. There isn't a sense during Zazen of filtering out. I want more of this, I want less of that. I want more of this, I want less of that. I like that, I don't like this. Good, bad. Right? And because we're so not used to doing that, we need a lot of practice. Right? That's how we always started it. So, I invite you all to do this, if you'd like. And keeping in mind what we've talked about with all the senses being touch, and this idea of the dhatus, you know, there's a toucher, there's a touched, and then there's the consciousness that makes that alive. This little thing, this is Zazen. You can see you're the toucher. You can see you're the touched. And you can feel it. Zzz. Right? That's the sound it makes in your head. This would be a really loud Zen, wouldn't it? This is Zazen. I am the toucher. I am the touched. And so then the nature of that touching becomes very, very, very important. Do you feel how you're separate and you're not separate? Isn't that fascinating? Here's the Heart Sutra for you. If someone ever says, you go to that weird building and you do that weird thing, right? Yeah. What do you guys do there? Oh, well, we have this scripture we chant called the Heart Sutra. Really? How does it go? And then you recite it for them, they'd go, wow. That makes no sense. You'd be like, yeah, I know, it's a steep learning curve. Well, how do you explain it? You could just go. You'd be right, and they're going to think you're deep. I'm just giving you a free one here. That is the way to go. Mind watches mind. It's also the emptiness of the three wheels, for those of you who know the meal chant. The emptiness of the three wheels, right? Giver, receiver, and gift. Bing, you got it there again. Yeah, I'm not going down that road today. At some point in, I forget the book I was reading, I want to say it was, I guess I will say it because I'm 90% sure, which means I'm wrong. Living by Vow, the Okamura Roshi book that he wrote about our chant book back in whenever it was, he was our interim guiding teacher after Roshi died. And somewhere, I want to say it was him, Living by Vow by Shohaku Okamura. Living by Vow by Shohaku Okamura. Two thumbs up, highly recommended. The equivalency was made between enlightenment, which is a word that's really, really loaded. That's a really, really loaded word, all of us know. And so I was kind of looking for, are there other ways we can describe what that is without using the E word, because the E word is so loaded, right? And one of the words offered was intimacy. Well, that's all it means. It just means intimacy. That's it. Just means intimacy. I loved that. I don't know that that works as a perfect synonym, but I love what that does to my brain. There's a whole different part of my brain that lights up with the word intimacy that doesn't light up with the word enlightenment, right? For one thing, I understand that intimacy is dynamic. I feel really, really close to you. And now I don't. That's just how it happens, right? I felt really close during that whole trip. And then I kind of didn't. You know, we spent the summer apart and they went off to camp and we understand that it's this. It's dynamic, right? But we tend to think enlightenment comes and it never leaves. It's a permanent state somehow. It's ridiculous, but that's what we tend to think. So I also appreciate the emotional dimension, the intimacy, the contact, the relationship dimension of the word intimacy. So then suddenly the activity of Zazen, right, which is ritual enactment of enlightenment itself, becomes an exercise in intimacy. When something shows up in the sense fields, did you hold it? Did you touch it? Did you include it? Did you understand it? Did you say yes to it? Do you feel that's a very, very, very different mission? Then did something get in the way of your enlightenment? Did you kick it out? Oh, good, 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 good. Isn't that nice? Good, good, good. What I can feel with that first definition is the idea of the one sitting Zazen getting bigger and bigger and bigger because they have more and more space to include more and more. I'm big enough now so that when something shows up, I don't have to say, we have no room for you. That's why the instruction being given across the hall is, relax. First, please, soften, expand, relax. You're big enough to hold this. When your restlessness shows up, because they're brand new. Isn't it sweet? It's so sweet. Mm-hmm. They're brand new. And they're like, I sat for 15 minutes. That's just like splitting the atom. Can you imagine sitting and not talking for 15 minutes? That was a big deal for me. First time that happened, I was just like, wow, there is nothing I cannot do. I am godlike in my powers. And I'm telling everybody, and what I wanted them to say is, no, that's ridiculous. No one could possibly do that. It would be impossible to sit still for 15 minutes without a distraction. That's not physically possible. They're learning to do that. And I hope, again, I very much hope the very first thing is soften and relax. Because you actually have plenty of space for your restlessness. Of course, it's going to show up. It's fine. You can experience restlessness. It's totally fine. Plenty of space. And at some point, they'll actually be like, oh, I appreciated it. I actually appreciated it. I'm not talking about clinging. I'm not talking about grasping. I'm not talking about attachment. That's not what I'm talking about. Appreciation does not necessitate those two things, right? You get the difference between appreciating and grabbing and wanting to own. Oh, I smelled the flower. I didn't pick it. That's a whole nother deal. Ooh, I like you. You're coming home with me. That's a very different energy than, oh, look, right? So that's how they're hopefully learning to be present to their experience. One more example, and then we're going to wrap up. I've used this a lot. I gave this talk a week ago, so for those of you who were at the Flying Cloud Zen retreat at Aslan Institute a week ago, I apologize for how much of this I'm repeating, but I really like the Star Trek picture. The example, and I'm sure I've given it from the seat before, I have a sister who works at the VA hospital, the vet hospital here in Minneapolis. She works in chronic pain. So already you have a pretty clear picture of what that world is. And one of the things that happens on that unit and with people with nerve damage is they lose feeling in the limb, in the finger, in the leg, in the arm, right? Sometimes that's permanent, that's just gonzo, and other times it isn't. And so the rehab unit is there to try to figure out, is there a way of getting feeling back into that limb, maybe even getting muscle movement, maybe even getting use back, because sometimes that's possible, right? through therapy, right? Through physical therapy. And so what she describes is somebody who has not had feeling in that foot, we'll pretend, since their tour of duty 10 years ago, it's been dead. And so through rehabbing and medication or surgeries or however they do, I don't know how it works. Every once in a while, there'll be a zzz that hasn't happened in that part of the body for, let's say, 10 years. All of us who have sat Zazen have probably had a limb fall asleep, usually a leg. Am I right? If you live in Minnesota or the upper Midwest, you've been out in the cold as a child too long. Your foot went numb or your fingers went numb, right? And they were numb for half an hour before you ran home and you got inside your warm house and then feelings came back. Do you remember what that felt like? Yes, it hurt. It's not comfy. So you can imagine I have not had feeling in my foot for 10 years. And now I do. The zzt came back. I'm experiencing pain. I'm experiencing pain. But I also haven't had feeling in that limb for 10 years. So when I have that zzt, what do I do? Say it, you know.
Celebrate.
I have an emotional reaction. What is it?
Joy. That's so good. Joy.
Right? But I mean, what happens to me?
I cry.
I cry. Isn't that interesting? I'm not kidding. That moment fascinates me. There was nothing, and then there was pain. And I cried tears of joy. You've all seen the videos. Go on Instagram. The little girl who gets the cochlear surgery, the implant, you know, and she gets the hearing aid for the very first time. She's never heard, ever. She doesn't even know what sound is. And then they turn it on and they're like, are you hearing it, sweetheart? Are you there? You know, she's there with her sister or her dad or her mom. Or she's hearing for the first time. I mean, Google this. There's loads of videos. People seeing for the first time. People hearing for the first time. People having the sensation in their foot for the first time. They all cry immediately. All of them. That fascinates me because what they are experiencing isn't pleasure. They're just hearing a sound. You're hearing it right now. This is an unremarkable thing. When will the bald guy shut up? It's just sound. It's not interesting. It's not pleasure. Right? The feeling in the foot that my sister described, she goes, they all cry. Beat up, grizzled, tatted up. You know, the crowd there is kind of rough around the edges, right? We've asked them to kind of give up their soul, to go do horrible things none of us want to even think about doing. So they're pretty guarded. They're pretty armored. And yet every single time they think, oh my God, there's something there and it's pain. And I'm so grateful to be experiencing pain. What I take away is I will choose pain over nothing because it's relationship, because it's alive. We will always choose life over not life. So the metaphor here for me in Zazen is every single time that I sit Zazen, pain is going to show up. 100% of the time. How do I know that? Because a human body is going to sit, a human body that has a karma, and the karma is related to the first noble truth, which is suffering. You guys have all noticed, life is hard. So if you sit Zazen for 40 minutes and suffering didn't show up, you aren't paying attention. And that suffering is wonderful. Flower was blushing unseen because your air was the desert. You weren't paying attention. So what I love about the story, the idea of being even grateful for the suffering, for the pain, is because the chance of meeting that with a relationship that transforms is why we sit. I 100% believe that. The pain that lives in me that I do not acknowledge, that I refuse relationship with, will stay there. Nothing will change it. Of course it won't. Right? But the suffering that I am willing to be present to, that I allow to show up, that I encourage to show up, that I even call out for. I miss you, you are me. Come home again. Please come home again. I'm sorry that I've ignored you for so long. I wasn't ready. I wasn't big enough. But now I am. I miss you. Come home. Where else is home? Buddha. Right here. You. Me. Plenty of room. Plenty of space. Plenty of space. You don't have to be alone. I'm right here. Right? You will not go unseen here. You will not go unappreciated. You will not go unloved. That's a big deal. That's a really big deal. That's a really big deal. Intimacy is enlightenment. So I very much aspire to take my life out of the Smithsonian. I very much want to have the experience that my friend here, Captain Picard, is having. I want to touch my life directly. I encourage you to aspire to do the same. Please don't waste it. appreciate your life. That's the title of Maizumi Roshi's book. You guys know Maizumi? It was Katagiri, Suzuki, Maizumi Roshi. It was that first wave of Japanese Zen teachers. That was his one book. Appreciate your life. That's the whole thing. Three words. Don't miss it. Don't appreciate the good and kick out the bad. Appreciate all of it. Or you miss the whole thing. It's a very high bar. Very simple instruction. And a very high bar. This is how we know what our life really is. Know thyself, appreciate thyself. It's a loving invitation, and I'm grateful to this tradition for offering it to me. And so, I guess I'm just offering it to you too. Thank you. So, we have a little bit of time. I know there's quite a bit we have to do with announcements this morning, but we still have some time. So if folks have something they'd like to offer, questions, comments, Thomas Gray poetry, please. And then
I want to talk about the flower being unappreciated.
Yeah.
There are always bees and pollinators appreciating every flower many times.
Yes.
They're not unappreciated. Not a single flower goes unvisited by bees and pollinators.
I like what you're doing there. Yeah, that's a great idea, isn't it? I wonder if appreciation is unique to Homo sapiens. I don't know the answer. Mm-hmm. I don't know the answer. I'm thinking of the nature of my experience when I'm acting out of instinct and really, really thirsty, and so I drink water. That doesn't mean I'm appreciating the water necessarily. I notice in my own life all the, food I've eaten and the water I've drank and just the way we care for our basic physical needs. I generally do it without appreciation, even as Homo sapiens. I generally do that without appreciation. I mean, I think all of us do. That's hence the invitation. Please continue to touch your life. You can't not. You're already doing it. But do it with that sense of appreciation. But you know what? It's funny. When you watch a bee, mm-hmm. What you're describing, Ben, the way that you're like, oh man, you look like you're really into it. Look, it's getting all over your face. Mm-hmm. Like they kind of fly away sort of half drunk and like covered in pollen. You're like, this is probably all projection, right? I'm just all projecting, like, you're having a really like super good day. You're not even remember this day. Like, what happened last night? There was a field of dahlias and we just, woo! Anybody who was there remembers it wasn't there. I don't know. You want to come back as a bee? Yeah, I would come back as a bee. Yeah. What do you have, Ruzan?
Thank you for the talk. There's so much to unpack, and I've got so many questions, but I'm gonna pick one. I know, in some ways, I think our human condition, we have something like this, or maybe we know people who are fully like this. This question, and that is. I like the perspective of everything is touch, and without taking it terribly literally, I know that there's a lot of folks, maybe selves included, where they're touch averse, and it's
in a more literal sense.
In a literal sense, but maybe even in the sense in your talk, as far as they want to have that healthy distance between them and experience, or a pain, or a thing, good or bad, even good maybe.
Yeah.
Sometimes there's, a lack of trust. People don't want to go to the hospital or something. Just, trying to keep that distance or just touch averse in the way you use the word touch.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you can share that maybe just riffing off of that a little bit? Like, how can we support that? How can we support? And I don't want to even say that that's bad. Because I don't know that that's bad. But how can we support the touch if we feel like it's appropriate?
Yeah. So what we're looking at there is the moment of being averse. I don't want to be in contact with, mm-hmm. and how to deal with that moment.
And how to support other people.
Oh,
just,
yes.
You're very, your talk is so great at how we can help support ourselves. How can we help apply it to people other than
ourselves?
The self,
you know? Yeah. Oh, that's a great question. That's a great question. On being touch of verse is a great twist on this whole thing, isn't it? Oh, I love that. There's a lot of other talk there probably, isn't there? I don't know the answer, but I don't know the answer, which is a relief for me. I don't have to worry about it. But I'll offer this just because it popped. On the way here today, so I drive in on Excelsior, and I was coming around the edge of the Bede Mikoski, this north side here. Is this the north side? Are we in that? Yeah. There was a lane closed off because they're doing all this construction around here, right? But there was a city van. A city van that was in the construction zone. I thought that seemed a little weird. And it said animal control. And I was like, oh, animal control. I wonder what. And as I'm driving, I'm going 35 miles an hour or whatever, which is the speed limit in that area. So I'm going about 45 miles an hour. And I see the animal control. And I'm like, that's a strange thing too. And then I see right in front of it is a deer. So the deer is conscious and the deer is sitting up, but its legs are gone. Right? So she, I'm going to guess it looked like a doe to me. I don't know. Is conscious and looking around, but she could not in any way get away because her legs had been broken. I'm sure she was hit or something. It was right by the golf course, so I'm sure she's right. So here's what I noticed about myself. I went, ah. You feel it? I touched it and it hurt. And so I did this. I went, ah. Can you feel what just happened there? I constricted the opposite of what's happening over there. I constricted and I looked away. Right? So I was touch averse. All senses are touch. And that moment was, ah. So the reason I love your question and where I would take it is, okay, wait, I see what just happened there. And I did see what happened there. I caught it. And I went, oh. And then I did my practice. The practice we all do, which is, where is your breath right now? Where are you right now? Are you centered? Yep. How do you feel? That's always, like, you, once you're with body and breath, you move up to the less dense thing. What's the next less dense? How do you feel? And I went, I am so sad. Yeah. Boom. Because the truth is, I'm not trying to avoid the deer. I'm avoiding this. This deer triggered this. Oh, so I turn away. What am I turning away from? I'm turning away from this. That's what I'm turning away from. Deer doesn't cause pain. It's just a deer. My reaction is what I'm trying to get away from, right? So when I recognize, oh, you're turning away, it's like, oh, you don't have to. You don't have to. You can be with that. Slow your breath down. Relax. You can hold it. It's okay. Do you understand? Now it's about me. I'm just touching my own experience. So what I 100% believe is, if I am touch averse, I'm going to close my eyes during that part of the movie, or I'm going to go to the doctor, but there's no way I'm taking off the shirt, or I don't want you to physically, whatever the symbol is here. These are just moments. What we know is we trust the aversion. There's a reason it's there. 100% I'm going to trust that feeling. But what I'm probably going to recognize is it isn't about the external. Actually, it's about the thing that happens internally. Right? So the goal for the rest of my life isn't avoid seeing deer, avoid driving, avoid. I mean, there's a bunch of things I could, I'm not kidding. I'm like, literally, I could be like, every time I da-da-da-da, that thing happens. And so I'm going to stop da-da-da-da. Okay, I get it. I'm trying to set a boundary. But from a Buddhist point of view, it's like, yeah, but what you're trying to set a boundary with is your own experience. And so maybe that's appropriate. Maybe there's too much. That's okay. Right? Then the sadness is going to turn into fear. You can be with the fear. And then when the fear gets a little softer, then maybe the hurt can show up and you can be with that. Maybe. But do you feel? The point is, the touch has to happen. We're already born. Never study the 16 dhatus. I don't care. It doesn't matter. It's already happening. It's just the dynamic functioning of consciousness. You never have to even know about this stuff. It's happening. Always contact. Always participation. Always consciousness. Always. But the beauty of the practice that we engage in is to bring all of that into as much awareness as possible so that I understand, oh, I know what just happened to me when I saw the deer. I see how I constricted. I see how I turned away. I see how that was about me. I see that there was a feeling there. And then I heard that there was a story there. Human beings. That's what I just did. Mm-hmm. That's one of my favorite things. Human beings are the worst. Or I go to problem solving. Why don't they make those fences higher? Or I went to, oh, I'm sure she'll be okay. But the animal control people are there. They'll take her to the Wildlife Rehabilitation Center, you know, WRC in North Minneapolis, and they're going to take care of her, right? Can you just feel? All I'm doing is, they're fine. There's no judgment of any of this. But I'm watching myself try to, I'm sad and I don't want to be sad. I'm hopeless and I don't want to be. And then it turns into anger and then it turns into. So my only, what I'm really trying to say is I'm aware that if you and I were riding together and you had that response, like, okay, I don't want to drive here anymore. I'd be aware, oh, Phil just had an experience. Rizan, sorry, I just had an experience. I understand that. I don't have to change that. I don't have to fix you. But I would be aware it's probably going to be about this. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So I would never want to see your reaction or your response as a problem for me to solve. Mm-hmm. I would trust that the aversion is the defense against the thing that's actually. Does that make sense to folks?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What a great question. Did that make it worse?
No.
Oh, good. I've been told usually my answers make it worse.
No, really. Thank you.
Todd has raised his hand. Hi, Todd. I don't know where you are on my screen, but maybe if I put my glasses back on, I would be able. Well, there you are. Go ahead, yeah, please.
Did that pop up now that I'm talking? Good. Well, it was great talk. I really enjoyed it. You said there's three components to each sense, and mind is one of those.
Yeah.
So I was wondering, and this is just me, you know, kind of thinking things out without really knowing the scripture in Zen Buddhism, but is it ourselves as the receiver in mind, and then like compassion, and then the Buddha nature as being like the object?
Gotcha. Good question. Thank you, Todd. I think I'm hearing you right. Did you guys hear that? Okay, good. Smell, taste, touch. What are they again? Sound. Hearing. It's elementary school day for me. We have five senses, and Buddhism adds mind. So mind is one of them. So there's three components here, just like there are three components in all these. And so when we get to the mind one, it's there's receiving mind, there's the object of mind, and then there's consciousness that links them exactly with smell, taste, touch, smell, or hearing, or whatever they are. And so when we're sitting Zazen, and you notice, oh, my mind is really busy today. That's my, oh, busy mind. Thinking is the object. The one who notices is the noticer. Do you feel it? That's the organ. That's the. And then, oh, but I'm paying attention. I'm aware of that. So there's a connection between the three, right? Yeah. Does that help? You're nodding.
Yeah, it makes sense. I was just wondering where the Buddha comes into all this. And compassion, but that makes more sense the way you put it. So I don't have a follow up question to that.
Thank you. It's great. Buddha's all of it, and compassion is the nature of the relationship that we're talking about today. Literally, compassion in its etymologically means to be with suffering. So in my deer story, That was a moment of me turning away from my suffering. And then when I caught it and went, oh, I see what I'm doing. That's my moment of compassion, or at least self-empathy. I will feel you. I will feel you. I will feel you. That's the nature of the consciousness that connects the organ and the object. In this case, the object is sadness, confusion, despair, anger. Can you feel it? I'm sad, but I'm the one who's receiving sad. And so the thing that connects them, I want that to be compassionate relationship, not just, I notice you. Yeah. Is that helping?
Thank you. That was great. That was really, really great and profound. Oh,
thank you. I'm glad you found something in there.
No, I did.
Yeah. All right. I know we're getting close on time here. So thank you all for your presence here today.